It's your time to Ed Up with America's leading higher education podcast network, the Ed Up Experience, where we make education your business. This is Ed Up Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. She's Dean at St. Mary's School of Law, and she's going to be leading conversations about legal education in today's world. Now let's hear from your host, Patty Roberts.
Welcome to Ed Up Legal. I'm Patty Roberts from St. Mary's University School of Law. And today I'm privileged to have with me one of our very own alumni, Mike Bassett. He's a civil litigation attorney who has practiced law for nearly four decades. He's a graduate of St. Mary's from 1987. He works and founded the Bassett Firm, a Dallas-based boutique law firm, which specializes in catastrophic injury defense. And here's something I just find incredible, that you have tried nearly 200 cases to verdict. That's a lot of cases, Mike.
It is. I was much taller and much more handsome when I started.
Less gray hair, or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. He's also, especially of interest to me, a host and co-creator of a podcast, and it's called Legal Grounds, Conversations on Life, Leadership, and the Law. I was very privileged to be a guest on that podcast, and now I'm so excited to return the favor. And then he's a published author, and I read his book earlier this semester, The Man in the Ditch, A Redemption Story for Today, and that was published in July 2021. So, Mike, there are so many things that we could talk about, and I want you to feel free to touch on as many as you'd like, but I'd like to start with the idea of law as a calling. You have talked about and written about how this is not just a job. Being a lawyer representing others is not just a job, and can you share with the listeners more about your thoughts in that area?
Yeah, you know, I think it is no surprise that being a lawyer is really a vocation, which is right up there with priests and others. And I think it's something that when you're in law school, you may not think about it because understandably you're worried about the next exam, you're worried about the bar exam, you're worried about other things. But I think we all would do well to sit and take the long view, Dean Roberts, and that is, when you are a lawyer, people are relying upon you, not simply to get their order correct, not simply to fill out a form correctly, but sometimes their livelihoods and their lives are in your hands. And there's just a real high degree of accountability and responsibility that goes with being a lawyer that I think we would do well to remind ourselves and others who are thinking of entering the practice.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I've always found it interesting that we're called attorneys and counselors at law, and we certainly do a lot of counseling, but what training do we get? Very, very little. It's just on-the-job training. So to think of it as a vocation and to approach our clients in that way, I think makes a lot of sense.
It's funny. I think the more and more counseling I do was the more gray hair that I got, which is probably wise. And this is one of the things that I'm such a huge proponent of, mentors and someone to help young lawyers as they are, as I will call it, raised in the law. Because while now there are opportunities that were never available to you or I when we got out of law school, and you can start your own law firm virtually now, or you can do an office sharing. But I think it's very important that when we enter the practice of law, we have somebody that we can turn to that will help us make those thousands of decisions that we make that not only shape where we go as a lawyer, but really also establish our reputation among the bar.
If I am a young lawyer in the Bassett Law Firm, how will you help raise me in my profession and my calling? What are the things that are most important that you will try to indoctrinate me to about our profession?
You know, they are called cliches, Dean Roberts, because they are true. And I think the first thing that we would talk about is that you would be raised by the firm. And that would be that all the lawyers at the firm would be there to help you succeed. The paralegals would be there to help you succeed. The staff is there to help you succeed, because we can graduate from a fantastic law school like St. Mary's, even graduate at the top of our class, and not know sic'em from come'er when it comes to the practice of law. So one of the first things we are going to do is work with you on that. Next thing you're going to do is you're going to get a work buddy or a training buddy. And that is somebody that you can call, or teams as it is now, daily with questions that you may have. And those are often going to be questions, Dean Roberts, about how does this lawyer like this? How does this work internally? I understand this is what the rules say, but how do we do it? The next thing we're going to do is we're going to provide you what I'm going to call structured training, where we have PowerPoints and training sessions where we talk about things that come up in our area of the law that are unique to the catastrophic personal injury defense that we do. And then the last way we're going to do it is what I call quick hits training. And that is every Thursday morning, our entire firm gets together, all of the timekeepers, and we have a calendar meeting. We go over the calendar for the next 3 weeks to make sure everybody's covered. And then when that's done, we have quick hits training. And generally it's two or three of our more senior lawyers. We'll do a 120-second training program. They'll talk about corporate representative depositions, subpoenas, how to respond to those, what to do if you want to hire an expert, what do you do if you want to exclude an expert? And those are continual training opportunities. And I never want to let an opportunity go when we have lawyers on a call or lawyers in a meeting. We're always sharing some bits of knowledge.
First, I would like very much to go through the Bassett Law Firm training program. That sounds
terrific. You say that.
Do you have any openings? Second, how did this develop? I mean, you started as a small firm. You founded the firm. I assume you were a lawyer of one at some point. And so how did you get to such an intentional training program with your young lawyers, which frankly, firms much larger than yours could, I'm sure, learn from and benefit from emulating?
Well, I appreciate the kind words. One of the things that came to me early on was I realized that I enjoyed training and I enjoyed teaching. And as I've done it longer and longer, I think I have more things that I can train and teach on. So that is one of the ways we've done it. The next thing is I'm a big proponent of things have got to be in writing and things need to be structured to some extent so that people know what they're getting and can go back and look on it. And really the training program has born out of the realization that people really want to do a good job, and you can be a very smart law student and a very smart young lawyer, but that doesn't mean that you know how to do the job that we have called you to do. And so I think if I want you to succeed, and I do want you to succeed, because if you succeed, that helps our clients, we've got to train you up. But in order to do it, you've got to be a lifelong learner, because I think that's one of the two, to me, coin of the realm for lawyers of impact, Dean Roberts. One of them is you got to be a lifelong learner. And second, you just have to be comfortable with hard work.
So I'm glad you raised the idea of hard work. And I wonder if you can share with our listeners, what does that look like when you're a lawyer? What is it solely defined by the billable hours we hear about or the number of jury trials or verdicts? How would you define hard work?
You know, it's funny when you hear lawyers say that I want to be a trial lawyer. Let's just all keep in mind that in Texas right now, I think the average percentage of cases, and this was before COVID, that went to trial was 3% or less, maybe. So 97% of the time you're handling a case that's never going to see a jury. So there is a lot of work, not that you don't defend these cases and work them up like they're going to trial, but there is so much you need to do. So let me just give you an example of what my week was last week. This is just a week out of my life. On Monday, I had mediations all day. On Tuesday, I had about a six-hour meeting here at the office with other lawyers on a big case we're trying in June. That's right, in June, we're starting to get ready. Wednesday and Thursday, I traveled up to Chicago to speak with clients. Friday, I came back and had meetings all day by Zoom. Saturday, I worked half the day, and Sunday, I worked almost all day. That is a normal week when you do litigation like we do. So that's what it looks like for me. And I will tell you, I think that's what it looks like for a lot of lawyers in our space that are lawyers of impact.
Well, and I'm not surprised to hear you talk about the Saturday and Sunday hours, because as you were going through your schedule, I was thinking, yep, no time to do your work then, no time to do your work then. I mean, that's one thing, meetings just consume your day, and it doesn't involve prep work of your own that you have to do.
And that doesn't even take into account the marketing, you know, which was essentially 2 days. And then there's the management of the firm, and that gets rolled in as well. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot that goes into what we do as lawyers. Now, as a young associate, you will probably not have any management role unless you run your own firm, and your marketing will somewhat be limited while you learn exactly it is what you need to do. But what I tell young lawyers all the time is, in this space, if you want to be a lawyer of impact and make a difference in the lives of our clients, this is not an 8-to-5 job. It is simply not. Because there is so much we handle during the week that when I get my deep work done, Dean, is on the weekends when I'm uninterrupted.
That goes same for deans of law schools, I have to say, because I never know what's going to come through the door or what issues going to have to be taken care of throughout the day. And there are meetings, meetings, and meetings.
And then more meetings. And you know what the problem with Zoom is? It has made it so easy for us to get people from all over the United States on a call, which is good, but also can be done so quickly. I have a client that wants to meet, and I absolutely understand it, but it's so easy just to set up a Zoom call. Remember, it used to be if we all wanted to get together, you had schedules. Now, you just send out the invitation.
Yes, I think it's a blessing and a curse, both. You didn't go to law school thinking that you were going to be starting your own firm, I don't think, from reading your book. So what is it that prompted you go to law school? How did your goals adjust while you were in law school? And what did the path to the Bassett Law Firm look like?
Yeah, so I went to law school because when I was a sophomore in high school, I was in a government class and we had a mock trial. And I fell in love with being a criminal defense lawyer. That, and I didn't have to do math homework for 2 weeks. And that's when I decided that I wanted to be a lawyer, literally a sophomore in high school. And then my dad said, that's all well and good, Michael, but you need a degree in case the law thing doesn't work out. So I got a degree, 2 degrees, one in accounting and one in management. And then when I got to law school, and I talk about this in the book, I thought I had law school figured out. I mean, I did pretty darn well in college. I had a good study routine. I thought I was going to crush law school until grades came out for the first semester. And back in the day when dinosaurs were roaming the earth, the way we used to get our grades was you would turn in a postcard to your professor and you would address it to yourself. And on the back, you would put contracts or torts or con law. And then they would mail you your grade. And it was not until the first week of February that we got first semester grades back. And I still remember walking down to the mailbox at our apartment complex and opening it up and looking at my contracts grade. And that is where the cold water was splashed in young Mike's face. He did not know what to do in law school.
Oh my goodness. So that's really interesting about the postcards. Dinosaurs also roamed the earth when I graduated from law school, and but we had a whaling wall. And so they would post these bubble scantrons up on the wall by social security number back in the day when you could share them. And there were people who would stand there for the longest time going, wait, okay, she's in this class and this class and this class. I'm going to figure out whose social it is and everything. It was horrible.
Oh no, they did the same thing. They put your social security number up there. And yeah, they used to post them. We called it the wall of shame. And I thought, all right, I guess.
Yeah. So you found out maybe you didn't have it figured out, or at least your contract's postcard told you that. So then what?
Then I thought, okay, I've got to redo this. I've got to retool the way I'm doing it. And so I thought, first thing I started doing, and we've talked about this over dinner, I started recording all of my classes. I would record every lecture, and I would go from when I was done with class, I would go over to the law library and I would listen to the lecture and I would type up my notes, because I learned that that's how I learned, was to recreate and to write and to do that. And then I got very disciplined in the sense of, in law school, I studied 6.5 days a week. I got Sunday afternoons off, because I realized at that point, if I wanted to be a lawyer, I had to really step up my game. And if I wanted to do well in law school, I had to step up my game. And that was another lesson I learned, that as a lawyer, you continually learn. Not only do we have, you know, minimum CLE requirements, but you've got to be a lifelong learner. You have got to, I always keep a folder of newspaper clippings or things like that when I travel, because I don't like to work on planes with a computer, but I'll pull out and read, because I don't think you can ever stop learning.
Well, that's great. And so I guess it worked, huh? You turned it around and
the blind squirrel finds the acorn.
Well, that's good. We did talk at dinner about how some students just find it so valuable that they're able to record their classes. And we saw that a lot during the pandemic, that students who had the recordings of their Zoom classes or some asynchronous recordings really were able to immerse themselves in the work, play it again and again if they needed to, and how that's a benefit. But of course, it's not, you know, every professor's first choice for handling classes, but it's great that it worked for you. And I know that my colleague and our interim dean and our long-term professor, Vincent Johnson, had had a hand in your turnaround, from what I understand.
He did. You know, he saw something in me and hired me as one of his research assistants during our second semester of law school. And, you know, he was my torts professor, and I took him for every class I could get, professional responsibility, advanced torts. And he was one of those people that really encouraged me and had faith in what I was doing when sometimes I didn't know exactly what I was doing. And he also challenged me. But here's the thing about it. He was always professional and kind. And he would hold you accountable, but he was never demeaning. And I think that made a big difference. I know it made a big difference with me, and I know other students as well.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. He's very, very respectful and kind to our students, as many of our faculty are. And you really get so much more out of students by approaching them that way, as opposed to fear and bullying. And I never quite understand that.
As opposed to them standing them up on the first day of law school for 50 minutes.
Yeah, the paper chase, like we all remember.
Yes.
Well, and you did end up doing very well in law school with your new approach of 6.5 days a week, right? And yep. So where did you go after law school?
Vincent Johnson told me about these things called judicial clerkships. I thought a judicial clerk was somebody who stamped papers at the front of the courthouse. And he explained to me what it was and encouraged me to do so. I had no idea that was out there. And I did, and was offered two clerkships. The first one was with the Texas Supreme Court, and they called and said, when you interviewed, they said, listen, if you interview here and we offer you a job, you have to take it. We don't care if you have if there's another one that comes along. And so they did. I also got accepted to the DC Circuit Court of Appeals, but that was after I had accepted a job at the Texas Supreme Court. And that opened up my eyes again to the practice of law. And one of the things I learned at the court was not only how to be a better writer, but also to be a better communicator. And that really stuck with me there. Even though I have no desire to be an appellate lawyer, I'm not smart enough, nor do I have the patience. But I learned that you need to be able to speak succinctly in complete sentences in an active voice and get your point across quickly. After that, I was fortunate enough to go to Coles and Thompson, which at that point was probably one of the premier insurance defense firms in the state, and worked under a fantastic group of lawyers. Chuck Green was my mentor, who retired earlier in April, which makes me feel really old. And I just learned how to be a trial lawyer and how to work with clients, and then about the business side of law. It was a great place for a young lawyer like me.
Well, and I suspect some of the seeds of the training that you do in your own firm came from some of the mentorship opportunities you had at that firm.
Yes, and also to be fair, some people do very well, Dean, with being taken to the top of the high dive and told jump in the water and go. And that's sort of the way I was trained. And I did okay. I didn't drown, but I thought that may not be the best way to train people. So I kind of reverse engineered it and thought, how do we start at the beginning? And one of the things that I learned early on was that I still say today, if people don't understand the why, they will never get the how. I can tell you how to take a deposition, but if you don't know why you're doing it, it'll never stick. I can tell you how to object to discovery, but if you don't understand why you're doing it, it never makes sense.
It's interesting that you bring up why, because I want to talk to you a little bit about how one finds their passion in the profession. You know, you mentioned that you loved that mock trial experience or debate that you took part in as a sophomore in high school. And so that exhilaration and that intentionality in preparing the arguments and arguing orally obviously was something that you really enjoyed, but that's not a passion to sustain you. What is your passion and how did you get there?
I think my passion is helping people who need help. I mean, we're on the defense side of the bar, and my plaintiff lawyer brethren laugh and call us on the dark side, and we represent big bad corporations. But many, many, many times I represent individuals who are being sued, who have never been in the legal arena before, and it is terrifying. And our job is to shepherd them through that and be there for them. And at the end of the day, Dean Roberts, I'm a problem solver. That is what I do. I solve problems. Because just like your doorway, very few people come through my doorway to tell me everything's going well. Usually when I get a call, something's gone wrong. And so I'm a problem solver. And that really, I think, is what drives me and drives our firm, is to be there for our clients. And it's the thesis of our mission statement, for those clients of ours who end up in the ditch.
And ending up in the ditch is the topic of your book, A Redemption Story for Today, The Man in the Ditch. Can you share a little bit about what one can find in that story of redemption?
I think what one will find is this. At the end of the day, we as lawyers, I think we have to embrace three core tenets or beliefs. This is Mike Bassett on being a lawyer. That and $2 will get you a coffee at Starbucks.
$2 probably won't get you a
coffee.
That's
true. Maybe $4. First and foremost, we have to understand that we cannot do this alone. We cannot practice law alone. The law was never meant to be practiced in a vacuum. Lawsuits were never meant to be tried in a vacuum. Law school was never meant to be done in a vacuum. So we have to remember that we have community all around us all the time. Because I think if you find yourself at the bottom of the ditch, or if you find yourself on the receiving end of a bad decision, I will bet you, Dean Roberts, that the genesis of that bad decision probably came from you being isolated. So I think that we need to understand that we are community. Second thing I think we need to do as lawyers is that is we need to embrace this concept of forgiveness and compassion. And I'm a litigator. I mean, I'm a trial lawyer, and my job is to win for my clients. But that does not mean that we have to forego forgiveness and compassion, because if we give that away, what are we? We're bullies. That's all we are. And the last thing I think we all need to keep really, really grounded on is this concept of decency, because we are blessed to have a legal education. I think it is so very common. You're in law school, all your friends are law students, you think everybody's a law student. You graduate from law school, all your friends are lawyers, you think everybody's a lawyer. You're a 20-year partner in a law firm, all of your friends are 20-year partners in law firms. But you know what? That is 1/10 of the population of the United States. 1/10 of 1% of the population of the United States. There are people out there, and we have people today wondering, how am I going to buy groceries for my family? How am I going to afford a tank of gas to go on vacation? And we have to remember that and treat people with decency. We've been blessed with an ability to make a living that, frankly, I think most lawyers, if they were being honest, would almost feel embarrassed how fortunate we are to make a living. But we can't forget that most of the folks out there are not as fortunate as us to have had the opportunity to get that education.
I think that's a really important reminder, and one that I hope we're continuing to teach here at St. Mary's. Now, before we get to our final question, I want to ask, why a podcast? You started this podcast, Legal Grounds, Conversations on Life, Leadership, and the Law. You have a diverse list of guests, from archbishops to military leaders to New York Times bestselling authors to at least one law school dean, I happen to know. Why the podcast?
You know, like many great things that came out of the pandemic, I realized that what was out there on social media and on podcasts for law was a lot of what I would call very technical and very useful stuff, or to me, it was dry as the desert. And I thought, you know what? I want to do a podcast that is centered around the law, but also talks about leadership in this thing called life. And I wanted it to be positive and uplifting, not Pollyanna, but positive and uplifting, because I don't know about you, but there are 10,000 channels on cable that you can turn to and get bad news. I wanted something to make people think, whether they agreed with the idea, agreed with the guest or not, at least make them think. And I enjoy visiting with people. I enjoy breaking bread with people. I enjoy having a cup of coffee with people. And that's how the podcast was born.
And has it met your goals? Do you continue to enjoy it? And will you continue to have guests?
You know, as long as people will come on the program, absolutely. I get to visit with some of the smartest people that do things I've never even thought about doing. And it is so humbling and so inspiring when you talk with these people that oftentimes I think it's easy for older lawyers or maybe older professionals to start down the, you know, when I was in law school roller, when I was a young lawyer, and when I did this and this new generation, I categorically reject that. I think that there are some young professionals, many of them that are coming up, they are imagining things that are never even thought of by us. So I spoke to a group of law students at UNT Law School last week, and I came home and told my wife, I said, you know what? The same thing I came after speaking at St. Mary's, the future of law is in great hands. There's some really smart young people out there.
There really are. And they're coming up with such compassion and such a heart for social justice and making the world better. It's refreshing and inspiring.
No, it is. And I think that a lot of that is born out of the diversity, not only of ethnic diversity, but just their life stories. Yeah, I think that's just so important.
So diversity is certainly one thing that legal education is examining. How can we become more diverse? How can we be more equitable for those who are diverse? In addition to diversity, what do you see as the likely evolution of legal education in the coming decade? And if the answer is different, what should the evolution include in legal education that perhaps we might not yet get to in the coming decade?
Well, St. Mary's is fortunate enough to have the first accredited complete remote law school. I think that's the wave of the future in the sense of if legal education is not always trending towards giving access to more people that otherwise would not be able to access legal education, I think to me, this is a guy that's not a legal educator, is going to be the overarching theme, because it will never go back to the way it was. If you think we're going back to 2019, I got a bridge I want to sell you in Arizona.
That's right.
And so I think a lot of it is going to be, how do we engage people remotely? And then how do we engage people so that they don't feel slotted, that they graduate from law school, I got to go to a big law firm? Because you know what? That's not for everybody. And here's a little news flash for people who think it's important. I don't know where any lawyer in our law firm graduated in their class. All I know is we have some of the best defense lawyers in the state of Texas. I don't know where they graduated in their class. It makes no difference to me. And I think it's easy to get caught up in that, understandably, in law school, because it's a metric.
Yes, we're big on metrics and data sets and statistical analysis.
And I get it. I mean, there has to be some of that. But one of the things I tell people all along is, I don't care if you're not on the top of your class. It doesn't mean that you cannot find what drives you and be a lawyer that makes a difference in people's lives. And it doesn't have to be a litigator at a big law firm. Maybe you want to go work for the federal government. Maybe you want to go work for the FBI. Maybe you don't want to practice law and you want to help other lawyers get their content out there. there are so many options other than lockstep going into big law.
If we put you in front of our incoming first year class this August, what advice would you give them?
Consistency and persistency, I think, are the two characteristics that will make lawyers of impact that make a difference. This morning, I knew we were talking today, and I thought about it when I was leaving my house at 5:47 in the morning. That's what I've done for 35 years is get up early, because that is my routine. Some lawyers work late. But whatever you do, Dean Roberts, you got to be consistent at it, and you have to be persistent. You have to every day do your best. Now, your best may look different on some days. I get it. And yeah. I'll be honest with you. There's some Fridays at 3:30, I got no gas in the tank. And then at that point, I do $10 an hour work. I rearrange papers on my desk, resort emails, because my brain is toasted. But every day, you've got to be consistent, and you have to be persistent, because if you are not, who's going to count on you?
I love that. And that's very true. And I know it is true for you, because I have had a cup of coffee with you at 7 a.m. at the diner that you go to every morning.
You were very kind to do that at my favorite diner, Lucky's. But it doesn't have to be my schedule. But whatever you do, just do it every day. And that, I think, is what repeated again and again and again will build the skill set, will build the reputation, will enhance your ability to impact other people.
Well, thank you so much. I think that's outstanding advice, and we just might need to have you come give it in person. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for having me on, Dean Roberts. Always a pleasure.
This has been another episode of EdUp Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. EdUp Legal is part of the EdUp Experience podcast network, bringing you the brightest and most influential minds across higher education and beyond. Here at EdUp, we make education your business.